great. Thank you. Okay. First of all, I just want to thank Sadia. I know he's not here, but he set it up, so I think he deserves that gratitude. We're going to tackle an issue tonight in the world of Agadah that is kind of the opposite of a standard issue that gets raised. People often are curious about the portrayal of the righteous characters in the Agadah. Classic sugya to discuss is Gemara that David HaMelech was not chote, when I think a clear reading of Tanakh is that he was. What does the Chazal mean? What do they really mean when they say Kolomer David chote ein elo toeh? That is something that I think has received more discussion. But I'd like to kind of flip the other side of the equation and ask about characters that we usually consider to be negative, people such as Esav and Bilam and Achav. And here perhaps we get the opposite problem. That rather than Chazal arguing that they're fully righteous, Chazal seemed to pile on all the avera they could think of for them. Right now, again, clearly these are characters who are problematic in Tanakh. Okay, certainly Bilam and Achav, one can make a very easy case that these are quite negative characters. But then that doesn't mean that they committed all the cardinal transgressions we could think of. So the question is, what are Chazal up to when Chazal attributing all these averot to these characters? We're going to try to develop a theory. Let's see some of the evidence first, what Gemara we're talking about. So let's start with the Gemara in Bava Basra. So it's the Gemara in Bava Basra that says that Avram merited that Esav really only rebelled after Avram died. He didn't have to see his grandson behave in a problematic fashion. So the Gemara says, Shalom marad Esav v'yamav mino. And how do we know that Esav did not rebel in the days of Avram? Dechtiv yabo Esav min asedeh v'yayev. V'tana oto hayom niftar v'mavinu. There's a famous midrash that the Adashim were really a meal of Nichum Avelim, which fits with this whole structure that here Esav is about to embark on the wrong path, but Avram will not be around to see it. Okay. Now, we'll do a little tangent for a second. The Gemara wants to know why Adashim is a good symbol for mourning. There's certain silence in the face of death. So there's no crack, there's no opening, right? The Adasha is fully round, fully enclosed. That's the silence of the mourner. Devar acher, ma Adasha zu megulgelet, it's round. Af evelut megalgad u'machazeret al bayolam. There's something cyclical about life and death. That is the nature of existence. So that is the other possibility. Now, it seems similar, but there is a subtle difference between the lack of opening and the round quality. And indeed, the Gemara asks, my benayu, ika benayu l'nachumi bebei. What about using an egg? So an egg apparently meets the criteria. I know it's a little bit tricky because I guess we would probably, I don't know if we would relate to Adashim as being any more round than eggs. But a Kamei Degmoy is arguing that a Beitzah equally lacks a peh, but is not as round as Adashim. Again, I'm not going to investigate the relative roundness of various food items here. But that, I think that seems to be the argument here, that the Beitzah would meet one of the criteria, not meet the other criteria. Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. That's really a tangent, although I think this is a very nice point we'll see in a second. Let's go to really the issue of Esav. Amar Yochanan, Chamesh Averot Avarot HaRasha Bot Hayom. That Rasha did five major transgressions on that day. What did he do? Baal Naor Marusa, he had relations with a betrothed woman. Haraka Denevesh, he killed. Kafar Bikar, he denied the fundamental principles. Kafar Betchiyat HaMeitim, he denied a resurrection. I guess Bikar presumably means basics about God. He denies Chiyat HaMeitim. Shat Et HaBechora, and he degraded the Bechora. Now, this seems like a kind of a lot to pile on Esav for that day. Let's see what justifies it. Baal Naam Rasa, how do you see that? So the Baal Naam Rasa has the phrase Sadeh. That's how it should be that, Esav. Harakat and Efesh Ktiv Hacha Ayef. The Ktiv Atam Oino Li Kaifa Nafshi Lohargim. We have the word Ayef associated with murder. Kafar Biktar Ktiv Hacha Lama Zeli. Why do I need Li? What is Li a reference to? The Ketivatam Zeh Keli, or sorry, Zeh Lamazeli, I should say. Zeh Keli Vanveu. Zeh is about pointing to God, Zeh Keli. So Lamazeli is a rejection of God. That's Kafar Bikar. Kafar B'tchir Meitim, Dechtav Hinei Anochi Olech Lamut, which again, the Gemara is taking to me, there's an air of finality to that. Anochi Olech Lamut, and there's nothing else. That's Kafar B'tchir Meitim. Now, it's a little bit funny, B'shat T'Bachar, you need a Pasuk. Meaning, compared to the other four, like, it's pretty clear. How do you know he degrades the Bachar? Well, actually, he says it. Now, clearly, this classic rabbinic midrash, but presumably there's some motivation, right? The word basadeh appears in many contexts in Chumash, and not all of them are negative. So there seems to be some special pursuit of attributing more transgressions to Esav, which we'll have to come back to why that is. Okay, let me make two other points before we get to the main topic. One is a nice Tosfos, okay, where you realize that the Rishonim did not fall in the trap of reducing everything to concrete halachot. Let's see what Tosfos says. Baal Nar Murasa, Vim Tomar Valolon Lo Nitztavu B'nei Noach on Nar Murasa, Kedaminim Perak Arba Mitod, Bulad Baal Yeshlem Nechneset L'chupa V'lo Nivela Ein Lehen. Right, according to halacha, non-Jews only get married when they consummate their marriage physically. Right, there isn't an erusin that precedes nisuin, right, where in Jewish marriage, right, even before they've been together, right, it already be a serious transgression of Eshet Ish once they've had erusin. There is no parallel in the non-Jewish world. Esav's not Jewish, so basically the question is, what's the big deal of Baal Nar Mursa? It's not a transgression for them. So Tosfos answers what you'd hope Tosfos would answer. Vomari, da'afal pish lo nitztav, v'mikomakam mechuara davar. Right, whether or not technically they are married, it's an ugly thing to do, right? Someone's already betrothed, right? They have a designated person who they're going to, please God, live their life with. So it is certainly quite mechuar to try to be involved with such a person. So whether or not Asa was formally violating adultery, right? Not everything, not every wrongdoing or positive act in this world can be reduced to formal categories, and certainly it would be problematic. Tosfos is very clear about this in the answer. Okay, that's one side point. The other side point I want to deal with is something in the Ein Yaakov. People should be aware of this. The Rif in the Ein Yaakov is not Rav Yitzchak Alfasi. Rav Yitzchak Alfasi did not write a commentary on the Agadah. Okay, it would be nice to have one, but he did not write one. It is Rav Yoshio Pinto, who was the chief rabbi of Damascus, I think in the 1600s. In fact, I'll tell you exactly when it was. She left my own book. Let's see when it was. He was the chief rabbi of Damascus in... Yes, 1565 to 1648. So he is one of the people who appears in the collection of Agadah known as the Ein Yaakov. Often there are very interesting things there. Let's see what he says here. Now he's interested in the two models for why the lentils were picked. Again, it lacks a pair, or it's round, it's the cyclical nature of human life. V'shemati bo'amim b'shem rishonim zal, shebo shnei tamim alalu, liot shtei mitot bo'olam. He says there are two kinds of deaths in the world. And I think those of us, please God, you guys are young, you haven't been at so many funerals. When you've been to funerals, the difference between the two is really absolutely palpable. What are the two? Achadi mitativit, right, a natural death. Someone, thank God, advances to an older age, and then they pass away. Kivo bekalachalai kever. Val ofer mitazu mityaches lenachem. So what's the consolation for that kind of death? Someone, thank God, lives to 95, sees great-grandchildren. V'lomar galgalu shechozer kizu derech halolam. Then indeed you could talk about the cyclical nature of human existence. That's an appropriate thing to say. That's really true, right? When one goes to a tragedy, a funeral of a 95-year-old, obviously there's a sad quality. There's no sense of the tragic. There's a sense of this is the way life should be. Someone should live a full life, right? Have a career, have family, see grandchildren, see great-grandchildren. That's the way it is. There's a certain sense that that really reflects the cyclical nature of humanity, right? That's reasonable. However, of course, unfortunately, sometimes there's another kind of funeral. Od yesh ofen acher mitot kritut. Again, karet, not karet as the Rambam would have it. Right? According to Rambam, karet means you don't make it to Olam Haba, but karet as many other Rishonim would have it, Tosfot and others, that a person passed away at a younger age. Kemitat habachurim chas v'shalom. God forbid the death of the young. Unachem al mita kazot. So what is the nichum for this kind of death? So now you can't say galgal hu shechozer bo'olam, because there's a sense that this is not what should happen. This is not what the natural cycle of life should call for. Sarech l'nachem b'vchina sha'adasha ein l'peh. Kach kol drachav mishpat tzadik v'yashar. Now here, I have to admit, I'm going to say an interpretation of this that might be me not Rav Yoshio Pinto, but it could be this what he means. Because there are two ways to say it. He says, what's the lack of peh? So you could say what he means is a lack of peh means you don't complain, right? Despite the shock of the early death, you don't complain. You justify divine governance. But maybe there's something else. Maybe what's the reaction to this kind of mita? What would Ein L'Peh mean? Silence, right? I mean, sometimes we don't need your profound reflections on divine governance or theology, right? Maybe the best thing in the face of the death of the youth is really silence, right? Again, not that we give up on belief, of course, but that, you know, we don't have anything intelligent to say. This is the perennial religious conundrum. We don't really know why this happens, right? Don't go to the Shiva house with your profundity of theological explanations, you can explain exactly why it occurred. No, in this case, silence is really the best. So I think, again, I have to admit, if you guys have any strong feelings whether this is me inserting this into the riff is what he's actually saying, I'm not 100% sure. But I think based on his dichotomy, it fits very nicely. There was a death of Galgala Choser Bolam, a natural death. You could talk about it. That's what's, again, obviously you don't go into the shiva house and say callously, well, she was 95, it doesn't matter. But there is a certain sense of this is the way life should be. That's the way life should end. And then there's another death, God forbid, where ein lapeh is really the appropriate response. One doesn't need to give one's theological reflections, one just deals with it in silence. Okay. Now that was a little bit of a tangent, although just they were thought the toast and the riff were too interesting to pass up. Let's go back to the main issue here. And again, we want to know why are all of these things being attributed to Esav? Again, in simple Pshat and Psukim, it's not clear that Esav has been Baal and Armorsa, or was Haragat the Nefesh, or was Kofer Beikar. What are Chazal getting at? Now, before we get to the possible approaches I want to outline, I'd like to point out it's not 100% true that Chazal are uniformly negative about these characters. In fact, I guess the flip side of my opening point. Right, with David HaMelech, we point out that Chazal seem to want to remove any sense of sin, even though it's clear in the Pesukim that there's something problematic. I mean, he receives a very serious punishment. But yet, there are also Gemarot that are on the other side. The Gemarot that actually attribute sins to David HaMelech that are not clear in the Pesukim. Right, there's a Gemara in Megillah about a certain interaction between Dov and Abigail, where you kind of have the opposite direction. So Chazal are very complicated. There isn't just one impulse. There's only one thing at work. So we get the same thing with these characters as well. The same Esavs and Bilhams, who Chazal are going to attribute various problematic behavior to, where we're also going to see positive things. The most famous of Esav, many of you are aware, of course, is Kibud Aveim. So let's look at this Midrash in the Yalkut Shimoni. Though there are several versions of this. So the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Batzatcha tancheni v'achar kavoti kacheni. What does that mean? I'll skip to the end of the second line. Rav Huna b'shem Rav Nachunya, mi icher kvodo she Yaakov olam hazeh. What caused the delay for Yaakov receiving his full recognition in this world? Kavod gadol shechibet Esav atarav. And again, somehow there's some kind of diametrically opposing relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov could not rise till Esav received his just reward for excelling at kibud aveim. Amar of Shum ben Gamliel, and here the even Tanaim contrast their poor kibud aveim with the exemplary honoring of parents of Esav. Ani kshiti mishamish et aba iti mishamish b'vgadim tzoim. Kshiti yotzei lechutz iti yotzei b'vgadim na'im. Kdei sheitzei l'shuk mevusam. If I went out, then I wore my nice garb. But taking care of dad at home and, you know, making the porridge in the kitchen, then I wore my lousy clothes. That's what I do. Aval Esav kshay mishamish daviv ay mishamisho b'vgdei malchut. That's when he put out his fanciest clothing. Now here the Gemara seems to, Midrash seems to attribute authentic kibud aveim to Esav, which is also interesting. Like in some Midrashim, the sense is it's all a game, right? It's just a way to get the Bechorah, right? Tzayin b'fiv, right? That is one possible interpretation. But does not seem to be the case here, right? Yalkut Shimoni, again, straightforward reading is that Esav had a legitimately good element of his life. He genuinely cared about kibud aveim, and that's something he deserves a reward for. Now here, as we know, Chazal are very careful readers of Psukim. Right? Even if we differentiate between Midrash and Pshat, the Midrash is reading the Pasuk extremely carefully. So let's think for a second. Where in Chumash would we have a sense that Esav excels at Kibud Aveim? What would you guys say? I think actually it's the close reading of Chumash here. You could even argue it's the Pshat. Where do you see that Esav excels at Kibud Aveim? Or is this something he cares about? Can I make a suggestion? Where are Chazal getting it from? Yeah?
After Yaakov dies,
Oh, very good. Excellent. I think you're absolutely right. Right, Esav clearly is in a murderous rage, but what's his first thought? Let me wait for my father to die, and then I will take care of it. Now, again, you might say, here, we're talking about a murderous rage, but at the same time, there's something to that. Meaning, he's not trying to get anything out of Yitzchak at this point. The bracha has already been given over, and yet he cares about that. You know, I don't want my father to see the battle of his two sons. I'll wait it out. Now, again, he doesn't know how long his father's going to live. So, in theory, it might be a strategy that could be a real delay in his plans. And you get it, very good. I think that's totally correct. I would also add that, you know, just Yitzchak's whole relationship with him, the fact that Yitzchak liked him, thought he was someone worthy of a bracha, obviously we could develop different theories about why that's true, but maybe some of it has to do that there was some kind of positive interaction between Esav and Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak, even if we say Yitzchak was making the wrong decision, presumably, I mean, Yitzchak Avinu, like, saw something. He saw something in Esav. Maybe what he saw was a certain excellence in Kibud Aveim. And getting back to Tzayid B'Fiv, right, there, if you read the Rishonim on Chumash, there's more than one interpretation of Tzayid B'Fiv. One, it could be craftiness, but what else could Tzayid B'Fiv simply mean? Yitzchak loved Esav because
he fed him,
right? Tzayid B'Fiv. He would catch things for Yitzchak and provide him with dinner, which again, some of Farshim don't take that in a sinister, crafty sense. That's simply who Yitzchak was. So here I think we could argue that Chazal are just reading the Pesukim carefully. We have Tzayid B'Fiv, we have Yikrivu Yemei Avi, we have the positive relationship between Esav and Yitzchak. Maybe there was something to Esav. He had a lot of negative characteristics, but negative people could have something they're good at also. He was positive at Kibrave. Now, if this is true, that Chazal are reading the Pesukim carefully about the praise, maybe we'll find something analogous about the negative. We still have to get back to the negative. Before we get there, back to Esav, though, let's set up another model. Let's set up the Bilam example. Very interesting Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Here we go. What does Bilam say about himself? Yodeya dat elyon. I am the one with supernal knowledge. I know the knowledge of the one above. Now, the Gemara says a very sharp line. Efshar dat behem to lo v'yoda. Dat elyon v'yoda. How could Bilam say he knows the knowledge of God? He doesn't know he knows the knowledge of his animal. Now, this is not just about the simple reading of Psukim that he doesn't understand his chamo, his aton, but rather there's another episode at work here. Let's keep going. My dat behem to lo v'yoda. What does it mean that Bilam doesn't really know his animal? So the Gemara is going to attribute a whole debate between Bilam and the aton. Let's see this debate. Or back and forth, maybe is a better word than debate. So when they saw, I guess, when the people of the Midianites, I guess, or Balak's people of Moab, when they saw that he was riding on a donkey, Amrula, they said, "My tama lo rechavta asusaya." Bilam, how come you're not riding on a horse? I suppose, I guess, this hasn't changed in human history. Riding on a horse is a lot more dignified and noble than riding on a donkey, right? You know, in the fancy, right, in those big movies, right, movie sets of ancient Rome, right? Right, the king never rides on a donkey. Right, that's not what you do. You ride on a horse. Right, that's where nobility is to be found. Like, what's going on here that you are even in the phrase right, ani v'rochev al chamar. Right, who rides on the chamar? The ani. So what do you want a donkey, Bilam? Right, someone of your stature should be in a more distinguished car, as it were. So Bilam comes up with all these excuses. Amalu b'retiva shadele. I sent them off to graze in the meadow. Really, I've got a horse. I've got my prize noble horse. I've been riding it for years. But, he's a little bit busy now, so I'm stuck with this chamar briefly. Okay. Miyad vatomer haton, halo anochi atoncha. But the aton says, that's not true. Like, why are you lying to these people from Moab? What do you mean? I'm your aton. I'm always with you. It's not just like, I'm not your temporary replacement because your horse is off grazing. Okay. Amrlai, so Bilam tries to squeeze out of it again. Latina Bama. Okay, I'll admit that the donkey's right. I have a donkey. I don't ride on him, of course, usually. I only use him for loading up, right? A donkey is more successful than a horse at transporting large packages. That's why I've got a donkey. Amrle, now again, we're playing with the psukim, of course. This is all working off the psukim. Asher echavta elai. Not true. I'm not just your donkey for transporting packages, transporting loads. I'm actually, I'm the one you ride on. Amrle, akrai ba'alma. No, it happens once in a while, but I'm still trying to say it's not really his norm. Amrle, the aton says, Meor chavar yom hazeh, not true, you ride me all the time. Okay, now the Gemara gets really a little bit more extreme. V'lo od el hashani oselecha rechivot b'yom v'ishut b'layla. Not only that, but I've got another role. Right, you ride me in the day, and then you engage in bestiality with me at night. Now, how do we know this? This is going to be a remarkable drasha. I hope you guys will, some of you will realize why it's a remarkable drasha. K'tiv hacha ha'askein hiskanti. Right, that is what the aton says. We have that phrase, right? Samach chafnun, that word. V'ktiv hatam v'atihi lo sochenet. Okay, which is about David, right, in his elderly age, and Avishag, as you know, mate. What's the problem, of course, with this? Great Russia, right? So David's with Avishag, v'atihi lo sochenet. So haskei niskanti also refers to being together, and that's how we know that Bilam was with his donkey. Yeah, Shlomo? Yes, correct. The pasuk says as clear as possible, v'amelech lo yida'a. Right, it's not up for grabs, right? It says that David did not know her in that way.
But Bilam did know.
Okay. So it's a pretty interesting Zer Shava, right? It's deriving something that's from A to B when it's not true in the case of A. Right? A little bit of an unusual kind of drasha here. So again, I think it raises the question, like, why is the Gemara attributing this to Bilam? This is even more difficult drasha than some of the ones we had for Esav, because as Shlomo points out, it's not really true in its original source that's what's going on. Okay. So now, but in the broader context of the Gemara, they want to know, well, how could Bilam say he's Yodei Dat Elyon, and he could be, like, out-argued by his aton? Elamai v'Yodei Dat Elyon, she Yodei l'chavein otash asher kodesh baruch hu kweis be'etz. Also, very interesting Agadah. Bilam somehow knew the moment of the day that Hashem gets angry. That's why there was an authentic danger to Bilam's curse. That, in that sense, it was true. And that was authentic when Bilam says, Yodei Dat Elyon. That was the Dat Elyon that he was aware of. Okay, but we're back to our question now. We've got the Esav example. We've got the Bilam example. Let us now deal with one more example. Really remarkable Gemara. The bottom source in Sanhedrin here. Amalei mar b'rei d'Ravina l'brei. Bikulu, regarding all the people in the Mishnah. Now again, what happens in the Perek HaChelek, right? The one Perek in Shas that is all Agadah. So it begins with a list of people who don't make it, well, Tolom Haba, including Arba Melachim, B'shloshei Yotot, and Bilam's on the list. So we're describing various characters in Tanakh who are problematic. What did Mar say to his son? Bekulu, regarding all these characters, people like Gehazi and Achitofel, lo tafis le midrash. Don't be so quick to seize midrashim, to use your midrashic ingenuity to say they're bad. Let it be. Just stick with the bad things they did in Tanakh. Levar mi Bilam Arasha, except Bilam. An amazing point. Why was like conscious about this? The Kama de Mishkachat Bay, whatever you could find about him, Darsh Bay. It's open. The floodgates are open. Any sin you could attribute to Bilam, just go for it. Right, whatever you can think of, right? I was going to say he wore shotguns, but maybe it wouldn't be a sin for him. Right, whatever it is, just attribute everything to Bilam. Now here, the Gemara must be up to something. Like, why is it that when it comes to Bilam, the floodgates are open, right? Whatever you could attribute to him, where other Rishayim, we will not make a similar statement. So I think we really have to get down to business here and try to figure out what's going on. Why is the Gemara attributing all these things to Esav? Why is it attributing all these things to Bilam? Why is he even saying that when it comes to Bilam, it's open season? Whatever you want. I never saw anybody discuss if like that goes on for the rest of Jewish history. Like, is it true for us too? You can make up whatever you want about Bilam. It's like, was that a limited truth? I'm not sure about that. But okay, let's try to work out a theory. Now, even with Bilam, of course, you have another side also. Okay, there's a Sifri in Dvarim. Just like we saw in Esav, the Chazal were also willing to see something positive. V'lo kam nevi od b'Yisrael kamoshe. Very famous pasuk. B'Yisrael lo kam av b'mod olam kam. There was a parallel nevi in the mod olam. Now here, this is really kind of astounding. Especially because we know, in terms of Ikrei Emunah, right, theologically, we believe that the uniqueness of Moshe's prophecy is crucial. But the uniqueness of Moshe's prophecy is what assures the eternality of the Torah, because then you can't have a superior prophet come around and abrogate the earlier prophecy. So this is really a surprising midrash. Now again, presumably the Gemara does not mean, the Sifri does not mean that had Bilam said he received the new Torah, that could have overridden the Torah of Moshe. I'll assume it doesn't mean that. Whatever it does mean, it's certainly a pretty striking statement. Right? The Gemara is willing to attribute a significant degree of prophetic ability to Bilam. So again, here also, it is not fully one-sided that we can't say anything positive about Esav, but we can't positively say anything about Bilam. Each one seems to have something to them as well. Okay, so now let's get to the real issue. What's going on in all of this? So I'm going to show you two approaches, though. In the classic approach of educators everywhere, I'm going to use the first approach as a foil for the second approach. Okay, I always feel badly about whoever I'm doing this with the first approach, because they're not worthy. They're worthy of more than being a foil, but I'm going to do it anyway, nonetheless. Okay, so in the beginning of Ein Yaakov, there are a number of programmatic essays about dealing with Agadah, including one by the Ramchal. So the Ramchal says, this was just a tradition. Let's see what he says here. V'zem b'fnei k'klal shebi adam, they had a rule, Chazal, shebemaseh tzadikim, kol ma sheyesh l'dros v'shevach, tzarech l'dros v'shevach, any positive thing you could insert. U'b'rishim l'hefech, shekach hayta kabbalah, this was their received tradition. Shel kavato, kavanato shel haborei barach, b'milot shechtiv, when God dictated the Torah, what was his intent? I tell the Ramos, I'll call Pratei Rasha Shla Rishayim. Ulevayar Kol Chol Kei Knutam. He was trying to convey all the negative aspects of the wicked. Ulehepech B'Tzadikim. Okay. Lahalim Kol Mashev Shar Shiyem Emei Agnai. Ulevayar Kol Mashev Shvacham, probably. Umisha, I typed it in. I guess they left that a bit there. Umisha Rotzeh Lidrosh Drash Amiti. Tzarech Sheilech L'Shitat HaKatuv Shazi Yaskim L'Dato. HaKshitat HaKotev, excuse me. So this is the tradition, like we had a tradition, this is what the divine intent was in writing the Torah. That is how you are supposed to darsh it. Okay, that's the Ramchal, certainly worthy of taking a position. But maybe something else is going on. There's a fascinating sefer called Mavua Talmud Ratzir Shchayot. Those of you who, you know, I know Rabbi Karmi does an intro to Talmud, I don't know if other people do it also. Is it just in his, if you took his intro, not intro to Talmud, sorry, his intro to biblical exegesis, so he has you read certain chapters from the Mavua Talmud, many of you did that. Okay, so it's really a fascinating work. There's about 11, remember, Tzvi Yerushalayim was a very interesting Rav in the 1800s. Okay, on the one hand, he was a fierce opponent of reform. On the other hand, he had certain scholarly or maskilosh tendencies, as it were. In fact, there's a very interesting doctorate on him, written by him. Who wrote the doctorate on him?
Carlo?
You're close. Okay, the doctorate on the Maritz Chayes was actually written by Rav Hunter's daughter, okay, by Brewer David, who now runs RJJ. I actually read it once. Okay. It's a few, I don't think we have it here. I think I got it out of the JTS library, actually. Okay, but he was a very interesting Rav. Mavua Talmud is kind of not about specific sugyot, but about the nature of Talmudic thought. And there are about 11 chapters on the Agadah. So he has an interesting principle here, which I think could go a long way towards resolving our dilemma. He says, Ish Rav Madrigai Yoter Pachutak Kibalam, someone who is on that level of evil like Bilam, Hu alul lavor al kol averot. He is capable. He's liable of violating all transgressions. Umifneze ein zarut b'drashot chazal shebilim balatano. Right? Therefore, there's nothing odd about Chazal's drasha. Let's read one more line. I think we'll get at what he's saying. Vasiba sheniyat chachamenu b'drashot keilu. Umifnei ki samu magmatam umavatam. Lachzik eitzalam et ikar gadol shenuchu chachamenu bali mishnah. What is the ikar? Mitzvah, goret mitzvah, vera goret avera. Now notice what he's saying here. He's not saying that Chazal had a tradition that Bilam did these things, or that Esav did these things. I think what's happening now is Bilam and Esav become symbols. They stand for a certain kind of character. And a certain kind of character is capable of doing these other things as well. And it might be like, we might envision ourselves saying, like, we could do A, but we would never do B. And Chazal is saying, no, if you have flaw A, you are capable of moving on to flaw B. But let's make it even more precise. I'd like to argue that it's not just very general. If you're enough of a bad guy, we could attribute everything to you. That maybe certain bad guys will be identified with certain character flaws, and they'll get something specific. And other negative characters will get different things. It's not just whoever's a Russian, we can attribute everything to. So let's try to map it out. Why is Esav associated with his things? Why is Bilam associated with his things? And why would Bilam, thirdly, be associated with everything? Okay? Because we have Esav's things, Bilam's things, and the other idea that Bilam, you could just attribute everything to him. So let's start with Bilam for a second. What did the Gemara attribute to Bilam? The desire to be with a donkey. Okay, anyone suggest what in Bilam's character might reveal that would be a potential manifestation of the problematic traits within him? It's just not clear that bestiality comes up in the psukim. What kind of character flaws does Bilam reveal that might lead to that? You have to think a little creatively. Now let's go back to Esav. Esav is an easier one. Okay, although here I have to admit there's one thing I can't answer, and maybe one of you will answer for me. That's why I like to give shir again. I'm still hoping for the answer. Okay, well, actually, you guys mind if I tell you a really good story about that? It has nothing to do with our shir. This is a good story. There's a major Talmud Chacham in Montreal named Rav Pinchas Hirschsprung, some of you have heard of. So a former colleague of mine, once had when he was 60 years old, so his father, who was a Rav, arranged for him to learn with Rav Hirschsprung in the summer. So it was a very nice opportunity for him. He had there sitting in the Montreal being drash, he's learning with Rav Hirschsprung. A Hasidish kid comes in who was sent by his yeshiva to be tested by Rav Hirschsprung. Right, this must have been the star of the yeshiva, so they sent him, go to Rav Hirschsprung, you'll be tested. So Rav Hirschsprung says, okay. So what are you learning? The kid says, Gittin. So he starts to ask questions. The kid's great. He knows the answers to all the questions. Finally, after a few minutes, Rav Hirschsprung asks him a question on a Tosfot. So the kid says, I don't know. So Rav Hirschsprung goes on to the next question. So the kid says, but what's the answer? So Rav Hirschsprung says, I don't know. So the kid says, well, if you don't know, why do you ask me? So Rav Hirschsprung says, well, I was hoping you know the answer. Then I have the answer to the question. So I think that's a good story for a lot of educational angles. But maybe one of you guys will work this out for me. Let's deal with the part of Esav that's the easiest. Among the various transgressions that are attributed to Esav, we have murder. Okay, why would that be an appropriate transgression to attribute to Esav? Well, obviously, he wants to murder. So whether or not he actually murders somebody, it's hard to argue he's not capable of that. One might argue that maybe this is pushing it, that the fact that he's a hunter might indicate a certain violent tendency in who he is. Right? Again, who else is a hunter in Chumash? Nimrod? Maybe there's a similar thing going on there. Right, so I would say it's not anything in the world we could have picked for Esav. The fact that he murdered somebody, that's the perfect thing to pick. Whether or not he actually murdered somebody on that day, the Esav characters of this world are liable to engage in murder. That's what the Chazal are trying to say there. He threatens to kill Yaakov. He wants to kill Yaakov. He seems to be a violent personality. He's capable of murder. So I think that fits in very well. I have to admit, if you then challenge me and say, why do we also attribute Baal Nar Musar, Kofer Bikar, I have to admit, in my theory, I have not worked that out. Not worked out exactly why those specific things, but certainly the Haragat HaNefesh fits in very powerfully. Okay, let's go back to Bilam. Why would we attribute to Bilam Bala Tono, and why would we further attribute to Bilam everything? So let's look at a Mishnah in Avos, and I think the Rambam is going to give us a great clue here. What does it say in Pirkei Avos? Kol mi sheyesh b'yadar shlosh adar malo mitamadav sham avinu, v'shlosh adar makarim mitamadav shal Bilam HaRasha. What is it to be a student of Avram? Ayin Tova, you look at things positively, Ruach Nemucha, a lowly spirit, you're humble, nefesh shvela, you don't think you're the greatest, mitamidav shel Avram, avinu. Conversely, ayin ra, you look at things negatively, a jaundiced eye, ruach kvoha, right, arrogant spirit, nefesh rechava, mitamidav shel Bilam rasha. Okay, now what exactly are the traits of Bilam being pointed at here? So certainly arrogance we have, he says things like yodei dat elyon. What about nefesh rechava? So let's look at the Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayos. V'yadua lebilam redifat hamamon, we know that he liked money, Vizer, Bivo, Mi Aram, Narai, Begal, Mamon, Shinis, Kabul, Kalat, Yisrael. He certainly likes cash. He's a hired hand. He's a mercenary. Okay, what else, by the way, indicates he likes money? Besides this, Chazal pick up on this. What does he say? Right? Which again, like, even if you're telling me you don't really, it's not going to do anything, but what you use in language reveals something about you. Like, why use that imagery? Maybe that's what's on Bilam's mind. Right? Bilam is someone who likes certainly likes to be well paid. Okay, next. What about, you know, it could be Ram's translating Nefesh Rechava as having like a healthy appetite here. Amnam Rov Tavato, where do you see that? Now, this is quite interesting because we don't really have Bilam engaging in hedonism in Chumash, but Harihi Atzato LeBalak, LeHatzig Nashim LeZanotim Yisrael, ULeSiman Yatzanit. Now, this is quite fascinating psychologically what Ram is saying here, because Bilam is not directly benefiting from it. It's not Bilam's suggestion is like send the women to him, but sometimes what you think of for misleading others could also be quite revealing about what you're thinking about. So the Rambam goes on to say, "Lulei tchunat rov hatava shaita benafsho, v'yot hadavar tov beinav ahuvetzlo." He viewed this as a reasonable way to behave. Loyim tzuvebo. Lefisha here, the very sharp psychology here. She tzivui hadam lo yeh lefi dato. So now, what does he want to claim? Think about it. It's a pretty remarkable advice. Imagine somebody's advice. Oh, you have an enemy. How do you deal with it? Tell the whole population, well, send out your daughters to be with them, and this will lead them astray, like a brilliant strategy. But usually, you know, in a lot of societies, people are a little bit more protective of their daughters than this kind of suggestion. Right? And yet, that's what Bilam says. So what does that reveal? Bilam is someone who's in favor of sexual license, right? Not in favor of restraint in this area of life. And maybe, you know, the Rambam is not commenting in our Gemara. Actually, no, he does comment. He does comment in our Gemara. Because then he goes on to say, next line, Chacham Amru, Bilam Boel Atono Haya. The Ein Safek, the another Rambam is really proceeding Gemara Tzchayas here. Ein Safek Shemi Shezo Haita Atzato. If this is the kind of counsel you give in life, Zeya Polo, this will be the kind of way you behave. So once again, I would argue, it's not arbitrary. It's not that we'll find any bad thing to attribute to the negative characters. We'll find something that fits who they are. Asa fits with murder. Bilam fits with Balatono. Okay, now what about the last part? Okay, what about attributing everything to Bilam? That does not seem to fit my theory, right? Because what character trait would lead to everything? So here I have to give credit to a shir I once heard by Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, okay, in my shul after davening on Shabbos. We contrasted Bilam and Balak. What would you say? Who seems to like suffer worse in our tradition? Who's like the real bad guy, Bilam or Balak? No. Bilam, right? Why? Well, why is Bilam worse than Balak? Want to make a suggestion? I mean, yeah, what do you think?
Balak has political motives.
Excellent. That's exactly what Rav Moshe said. The first time when he made the point, oh, that's really good. I should have thought of that. Right? Balak genuinely feels threatened. Now, it doesn't mean that he's totally justified, but he's not doing it for frivolous reasons. He feels threatened by Am Yisrael. So you're threatened by Am Yisrael, you want to react, so you hire someone to deal with them. Okay? On a certain level, that makes sense. Again, I'm not saying it's good, but on a certain level, it makes sense. Bilam is a pure mercenary, right? He is not in any way threatened by Am Yisrael. He's not in danger. His population is not in a place where he's in trouble, but he's a hired hand. He's a hired gun. So Rav Moshe went to argue that is why ultimately, I mean, he had homework to cheer about this. I assume it's probably written up somewhere, but that is why ultimately Chazal and our tradition are more negative about Bilam than about Balak. Now, it occurred to me, he didn't say this, but if you plug in here, it might work out great. What is the flaw that leads to everything? Being a mercenary, i.e., if you're willing to sacrifice your principles to make a profit, so then anything could go, right? Because then, again, if that's what it's really about, like, well, the profit motive is the guiding force in my life, so you could be asked to do transgression A, or sin B, or iniquity C. It all goes together, right? It's all about the profit motive overcoming moral scruples. So maybe you combine these two things. That's why specifically Bilam, the Gemara says, the floodgates are open, right? Bilam's the personality that he'll do anything. Yeah.
It also explains Gehazi, Achitofel, Achan, other people in the Gemara, those people who did stuff for money. Achan, Yisrael.
Right, except for one thing. It's nice what you're saying, but the Gemara actually is contrasting, right? When it's saying, well, what did the Gemara in entrance say regarding all these other people? Yeah. It's limited.
No, but in terms of fact, they're vilified so much.
Okay. Meaning, that's good. Saying, irrespective of this point, maybe like Chazal have an extremely negative attitude towards the mercenary.
Right,
okay, yafeh. It's a sharp point. There's like a good study to be done there. Right? The mercenary personality in Chazal, in the Midrash and the Agadah. Okay? Very good. Okay, let us deal with one last thing and I'll wrap it up here. But again, I think this all fits in with the Maritz Chayas theory. That Chazal are not necessarily working off a tradition or even assuming that this would happen. but they're making a point about a certain kind of character. They want to portray a character in a certain way, realize where traits lead. Now, the Maariv Chayes wants to prove that this is not working off a tradition when it comes to these characters. He asks a question, a very interesting Yerushalmi. Let's look at this Yerushalmi. Okay. Rabbi Levi Aved Darash Hadin Karya Hashata Yarchen Lignai. Okay, see, for 6 months, he darshened negatively about Achav. Okay, Rabbi Levi Shol, he got up every day, every Shabbos, I don't know how often, I don't know why they get bored of discussing Achav, but he was negative about Achav for a 6 month period. Rak, what do you quote? Rak lo yaka Achav asher makel asad rabbe ne Hashem. He quoted this pasuk from Sefer Melachim, no one is more dedicated to evil than Achav. Okay, that's what we have here. We have Achav as the problematic character. Rabbi Levi is giving this weekly drashot against Achav. Ata legabe belelia. So Achav comes to him in a dream. I guess Achav knows about the weekly sermons of Rabbi Levi and says, well, that's not really fair. But what I do, like, did I somehow insult you, Rabbi Levi? Why are you out to get me? Now that, he says, Rabbi Levi, you're not really intellectually honest. You didn't quote the end of the pasuk. Itlacha reisha de psuka. You've got the beginning of that pasuk. Veletlach sofe. How come you don't have the end of the pasuk? What does it say at the end of the pasuk? Asher hisita oto izevel ishto. The same pasuk that says that Achav was sent out, the worst of the worst, says that the real instigator, was his wife Izebel. So why didn't you quote that? You could have quoted that and portrayed me in a totally different light. So look what happens now. So this dream apparently shakes up Rabbi Levi. Avid darsh leishita yarchem l'shevach. So the next 6 months he gave praiseworthy drush out about Achav. I don't know if the tzibur was confused or not about what happened, but somehow Rabbi Levi shifted gears. Okay. Now, it's debatable whether there's an absolute proof or not, but look what the Maariv Chayes wants to derive from this in the last line. Umikan atadan l'chol drashot keilu. Sha'akol taloi bedoresh v'lo hayu be'elu anyanim shum davar mekubal. What does the Maariv Chayes want to say? Like, let's say they had a received tradition that Achav is totally negative. So then, on a certain level, who cares that Achav comes to you in a dream? You've got your tradition, you stick to it, right? You might say, you know, divrei chalamot lo malin v'lo moridin. Right, there are various things you could say to neutralize the dream, why the dream should not be taken as some kind of prophetic message. So stick to your guns. You've got to receive tradition. Says the Maariv Chayes, what's here, Shkaya? What does that show? This was an educational endeavor. And the educational endeavor could be pulled one way, and this educational endeavor could be pulled another way. Right, again, we know Achav is a negative character. That, there's no denying. That's what happens in Nach. Whether Achav did other bad things, or whether he didn't do other bad things, that's open. And to some degree, you could shape it based on your pedagogic needs. So again, so I wouldn't say it's a total free-for-all. We have a certain sense in Chumash of who is a positive character, who's a negative character. But some of what we do with them is, again, think about like your good shul rabbi. Good shul rabbi giving a drasha. Sometimes you have a point you want to make, and the biblical character might be more of a springboard for that point than you have some kind of received tradition about his behavior. So let me just sum up what we've done, and I talk for a minute about the yeshiva I'm representing. So I think we've seen some important things, some of them not having to do with biblical characters, but important nonetheless. It's an important Tosfot, that even if for non-Jews, Baal, Nar, Marusa is not technically adultery, that certainly does not mean it's okay. Right? There's something that is Mechu'ar, right? Is ethically ugly. We had an important riff about two kinds of tragedy. There's a time when Gal Gal HaChozer Bo'olam is the appropriate reaction. Someone passes away at an advanced stage. There's a time when Ein Lapeh is the only appropriate reaction. Someone, God forbid, pass away at an earlier age, where there's really a certain level nothing to be said. We saw that Chazal are not fully negative or fully positive. Even with David HaMelech, we have a certain amount of justification together with other kinds of criticism. We have the same with the Bilams and the Esavs of the world. Regarding Esavs, Kibud Avim, I wanted to argue that's really implicit in the Psukim. I think we worked that very well. Regarding the negative things, I wanted to work with the Maariv Chayes approach, that we're not working with the Sieve tradition. We're pointing out certain character flaws and where they lead to. And I think it's an important point. Like, we ourselves might have certain character flaws where we can't imagine them leading to something truly evil. But again, you know, every truly evil thing begins with a smaller step in that direction. That doesn't mean we should live in a panic all the time that we're going to be totally evil. But realize that, you know, certain paradigmatic character flaws, they're the stepping stones to much worse behavior. So Esav and murder certainly works out. Again, the question I don't have an answer to. I'm open to suggestions why Chazal think Esav should also be connected with Nar Musa or Kofar Bikar. Shall we have a suggestion?
I thought it was interesting that have some variation on all the big three.
Ah, that's Amarasa interesting.
Amarasa and then Kofar Vayikar, which is, you know, what has already been taken.
Oh, yeah, fair.
So, in which case, it's not so specific. It's where you take the paradigm of all bad. And
right.
Based on
Esav. I mean, I was saying, like, it's a little bit different than Bilam. Bilam attribute everything to him. Esav, we're saying, like, he's capable of the worst things. Right. And then we'll give the three. Oh, very good. I see learning Yehard Vayavar this year is having an influence on your thinking, Shlomo. Yeah, please.
Also, thank you so much messy stuff with his wives later and when you his kids.
Right, correct.
And forth, and there's something,
I was wondering that.
Okay,
very good. What's your name, buddy?
Yaakov.
Okay, you know, Yaakov, good. I was wondering about Yaakov's suggestion. Because you do have a sense that his wives bother Yitzchak and Rivka. But I think it's like, it's not necessarily the same thing as like sexual morality. Oh, you don't mean that.
I mean, then also later on when you have all the change and all those crazy Rashi figuring out all the back and forth.
Okay. You say when we do the genealogy of Esau's family.
Yeah, there's something going on. Something
that's interesting. Do you think the first thing would be a support also? Because I was wondering about that.
Well,
you could say, like, you marry a lousy woman, that's a separate flaw than, not necessarily the same character trait as.
Yeah. Well, that's also a caution, the whole fact that he was keeping up the aim. That's one of the problems with that, because it shows he wasn't so interested in his father.
Right. Although, you know, you could be good at giving him and, like, make a mistake in a given. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Okay, and I think with Bill Mooks it very nicely. We saw Bill as someone interested in sexual license in terms of the advice he gives. Perhaps that's why the Gemara attributes Bela to know. I wanted to argue, based on Rav Moshe Lichtenstein's idea, that's also why we attribute everything to him. That's what that Gemara means, because the mercenary personality is precisely the person who's capable of any flaw. Let me just talk about Yeshiva for 1 minute. So I'm here representing a Yeshiva called Shvili HaTorah. I run the Kol there, which is a program for people to come for a year after college to learn. You have your own Seder in the morning, and the afternoons, there's a machshava shiur I give and other opportunities in the afternoon. And then at night, you learn with the younger fellows. So because most of the people in the room have other plans for next year, but if you spread the word, let other people know of this learning opportunity. It's like, it's nice learning, it's nice teaching, and it's nice practically also in the sense that you get room and board and a small stipend and being Yerushalayim. So I think there are a lot of nice advantages, but the best reason to come is if you like learning and like teaching and being a nice influence on younger students, I think it's a good opportunity. Okay, the last thing I'll mention is I guess now that I mentioned Yeshiva, I could get like a little self-promoting also. I actually wrote a book in Agadah. If anyone would like to purchase a copy, you are free to come over to me afterward. And thank you very much. It was very enjoyable learning with you guys. You should all learn well here. Am I supposed to shut it now? Oh, you got it? Okay. Yaakov, where are you from? Okay. Yeah. Where do you go to Yeshiva? What are you studying here?
I'm going to turn this off for a second. I'm here. Just one second. I don't want everyone to know what I'm doing. Yeah.